ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Amuni Pancha Sthanani Hyadharma Prabhava Kali Autareyena Dattani Nyavasat Tan Nideshakrit Amuni Panchasthanani Yadharma Prabhava Kali Autareyena Dattani Nyavasattan Nideshakrit Amuni Panchasthanani Yadharma Prabhava Kali Autareyena Dattani Nyavasattan Nideshakrita Amuni Panchasthanani Yadharma Prabhava Kali Autareyena Dattani Nyavasattan Nideshakrita
Yeah.
Amuni, all those. Pancha, five. Stani, places. He, certainly. Adharma, irreligious principles. Prabhava, encouraging. Kali, the age of Kali. Autareyena, by the son of Uttara. Datani, delivered. Nyavasat, dwelt. Tat, by him. Nideshakrit, directed. Translation. Thus the personality of Kali, by the directions of Maharaj Parikit, the son of Uttara, was allowed to live in those five places. Purport. Thus the age of Kali began with gold standardization, and therefore falsity, intoxication, animal slaughter, and prostitution are rampant all over the world. And the saner section is eager to drive out corruption. The counteracting process is suggested above, and everyone can take advantage of this suggestion. So Prabhupada's mentioning here, Maharaj Parikit's mentioning here, Prabhupada's mentioning here that we have this problem of Kali Yuga that is based on falsity. It's not actual standards. And beginning here, then with gold. Because in the Maharaj Parikit's kingdom, basically, the other elements were not very prominent. You might find it around the edges, out in the jungles, different things. Some elements are there, some aspects. But in principle, then, these things wouldn't be going on. So there's very little influence it can have. The problem is making the point the gold standard then creates falsity because it's not actual, really, gold. You're taking advantage of gold, but not actually what it is. Right? You're prostituting gold. Just like the principle is then from there, prostitution of everything else comes up. Right? Means animals aren't meant to be eaten. They're meant for other work. Right? Women aren't meant for sex. They're meant for other work. Your intoxication is not meant for enjoyment. Some of them have use as medicine, but not more. Right? Gambling doesn't have any importance. Mental speculation used within the context of jnana yoga in the devotional process has some worth. But otherwise, other than that, it's not important. You know, so the gambling, the speculation, frivolous sports, they don't have any purpose. You know, so that this is to be avoided. But Prabhupada's pointing out this is starting when the goal, the whole foundation of the whole society, is then, what's the word he uses? Prostitute. Just prostitution of gold. Yeah. So, the whole principle is that you're having something that's being used the way it shouldn't be used. Right? This is the basic principle. So this applies everywhere. We'll think, okay, it's a nice story in Bhagavatam. And, okay, Kali can reside in these places. You know, I don't go there. So, you know, what has it got to do with me? But everything in the Bhagavatam will have relevance for the devotees. Point is, this prostitution is a principle. Right? It's not just a particular activity, it's a principle. The principle is that you're taking something that should be used in one way and using it in something less, something that's not complete. Right? Does that make sense? So you take gold. Gold itself has value. So it should be directly used for trade. Does that make sense? It means you're either taking, okay, I have a sack of rice, and you have, you know, a sack of dal. And whatever the exchange rate, whichever is more difficult to grow, whichever's been brought from the longer distance, you know, whichever is more rare, that will have more value. You know, and also depending on the community. Some community values rice more, someone dal more, right? You go to North India, dal is more meaning than rice. You come to Bengal or South, rice has more meaning than dal. Does that make sense? So, depending upon that, you will fix your value, and then I will trade you so much weight of, or volume of, rice for so much dal, or I have cloth, and I'll trade that for rice or dal, or we make pots, we'll trade that for that, or we don't have a commodity, we have gold, or we have jewels. Does that make sense? So, there's real meaning, there's real value to it. It is what it is. The gold standard means we have gold hoarded someplace. Right? You have some place. And then supposedly, based on that, we issue pieces of paper that say, we have the gold and this piece of paper is worth what the gold is. So, it sounds good, but it's not what it is. You understand? Because the paper doesn't have any meaning. And the gold, itself is valued. So this is prostitution. Does that make some sense? So in the same way, we take this into what we think prostitution. That means women have a quality, right? The platform is the mind, the emotion. So from emotion, you can get intellectual, you can get sensual. So to deal with a woman only as senses, that's prostitution, right? Because the mind's not included, so it's not actually a woman. Does that make sense? Just like it's not, the paper's not actually gold. The principle that it has some value is there, but it's not actually being used. Does it make sense? So that's the whole point. One's approaching women for sensuality, but that's not a woman. A woman is emotions. Right? If the emotions deepen, there's intimacy, then it expands into sensuality. Right? The mother, because of the emotion for the child, then sensually deals with the child. Right? She feeds them, dresses them, does all this thing, hugs them, kisses them. Does that make some sense? But you take away the emotion, then all those that has no meaning. It's not real. Does that make sense? A mother taking, feeding its child, doing this without any emotion, isn't a mother. And technically, isn't a woman. Right? She won't do it. She has affection, she will do it. She doesn't have affection, she won't do it. Right? Man is different. Right? Because they're focused on their foundation instead of the mind, it's the intelligence. So that means their realm is intelligence, and the reverse of that is the senses. They're both coming out of passion. Right? So a man can take care of someone else's senses simply as a duty. Right? With no emotion. Does that make some sense? But woman can't. The emotion has to be involved. So therefore, prostitution as such is called prostitution because the emotion's not involved. Does that make sense? So in the same way, the gold standard is prostitution of gold. Right? Does that make sense? So same way with the animals. It means they're meant to plow the fields, this and that. They're not meant to be eaten. Does that make sense? So that's there, okay, on the direct what we're used to here. But if we look at it, stand back more. Look at the forest rather than the trees. Then the material world is Krishna's. Is Krishna's energy that's supposed to be used in His service. We're souls, jivas, that are His servants. So for the jiva to think that they're God, which they're not, and the material world to be enjoyed by the living entity, which it's not meant for, that's prostitution. Does that make sense? So material life is prostituting the material world. Does that make sense? So that's the bigger picture. In other words, nowadays, because of its usage, then a term gains a particular flavor, though it doesn't mean that. Like you take intercourse, it simply means interaction between two different entities. Right? It could be social intercourse, it could be so many different things, but now if you say intercourse, it simply means sex, right? So the same way prostitution, we simply means that. No, prostitution just means the thing is being properly misused and exploited without actually dealing with it in its natural state. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the difference between diplomacy and dupliciousness, right? The form of it looks the same, right? Diplomacy means that you have a higher standard. The person you're dealing with has a lower standard. And you are wanting them to understand the higher principle, but you cannot present it as it is. You have to, through some adjustment in the presentation, make it palatable to the other person so that they will accept it. That's called diplomacy. Right? The child does not want to take the medicine because the medicine is bitter. Mother's taking the medicine and going, very nice. That's diplomacy. It's not dupliciousness. And then they give it to the kid and the kid goes, oh, it's bitter, you tricked me. But it was for the kid's benefit because it's a higher principle of health. And the kid's standard is just my senses. I don't like it, I don't take it. Does that make sense? So in the preaching or anything else, diplomacy is that you're explaining something in a way that they'll understand. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, it's like, one time I went out and selling books, you know, came across some, you know, whatever. I'm not sure what country they were in, so I don't know whether, yeah. So they gave it to, the guy was there with his girlfriend, and he gave him the books, and he said, okay, what is this, you know? And he couldn't understand spiritual life, this, that. So he says, but he had heard these New Age terms, so enlightenment. So this is a book on enlightenment, right? Not about God or, you know, this or that, just enlightenment. And then the guy turns to the girl and says, girl, I'm going to buy you some enlightenment. And then he buys the book. And so that's diplomacy. Is that understood? Dupliciousness means you have a lower standard and you're presenting it as a higher standard. Does that make sense? So the form of it will look the same, where you are presenting something actually not as it is, but because you're actually trying to get a lower purpose by presenting or projecting a higher, that's dupliciousness. But when it's the other way around, that's diplomacy, that's fine. So therefore diplomacy nowadays has a bad term, right? I mean, in New Age speak, then it's considered bad. But everybody does it every day of their life, to practically everybody. Right? There's very few people that you trust and have such a close relationship with as you think you speak. Think about it. How many you have? That means everybody else you're being either diplomatic or duplicious. You know what I'm saying? So it's just part of life. But because of the things we get to... So therefore, the problem is in language, by common usage, then it takes on a semantics that it means a particular thing. But the word itself is much broader. So prostitution simply means that you're exploiting something in a way that it's not meant to be. It means you can only exploit something in a way that it has an aspect of. Right? Does that make sense? It means an animal can be killed and eaten. Does that make sense? So you can exploit it in that way, but that's not the way it's supposed to be applied. Right? You could deal with a woman only on the sensual platform. No emotion, no facility, no protection. Yes. So you could exploit in that way, but it's not the nature. It's not the complete package. Does that make sense? So when you only deal with part of it for one's own purpose, then that's exploitation. So that's prostitution. Right? And it's used both ways. The women will also use it in the opposite also. Right? They will use it to, because the men will only can only see that aspect generally of women, so they can use it to advantage. You know what I'm saying? But it's exploitation in either case. Does that make sense? So the principle that's here, besides knowing how the material world works, we don't, in other words, everything should be used according to its religious principle. What's being established here, Parikshit Maharaj, is the form of religion. Right? He's seen by Kali. And Kali would know, right? He is irreligion. Right? So naturally, he can spot what is religion. If you want someone as an authority to point out what is religion, he would definitely be a person who could tell you. You know what I'm saying? Just like if you really want to know who a good girl is, you ask the bad girls. They know. The ones that are actually bona fide bad, right? Not trying to be bad or projecting to be bad, but actually are bad. They know who's good. That's why it says in the Niti Shastra, you know, also in the Dharma Shastra, it comes from Dharma Shastra, that you can take advice on morality from a sinful person. They can tell you. Right? If they're honest. It means they have to be bona fidely sinful. Right? Right? If they're only wannabe sinful, don't bother. They're not worth it. They're wannabes. You know? Like that. Because they know it's bad. That's the thing. And they can tell you exactly what's bad about it. But because of their attachment, they're sinful, so they're attached to it, they can't get out of it. But they know it's bad. Right? Somebody who's actually an addicted smoker can tell you exactly what's wrong with it and why you shouldn't get involved. So you can take advice from them on that. Does that make sense? They will give you good advice. So in the same way, Kali Raj, he is sinful. He is bad. He is sin personified. So he can tell you, this Parikshit Maharaj, he's good. Right? So you can take it as an authority. So the principle is being established, one of the things being established here, is the point of what is religion. What actually is religion? Actual religion is using something in its actual way it's supposed to be according to its nature. Does that make sense? So the material energy's nature is it's Krishna's energy. Inferior, I'll bet, but it's his energy. Does that make sense? So it's supposed to be used in his service. If it's not, it's you're prostituting the material world. Does that make sense? If you're using it for Krishna, you're dealing with material energy, it doesn't act as material energy, it acts as yoga maya. Right? But when it's used improperly, then it becomes Mahamaya. Does that make sense? Does this make some sense? So in other words, know what is the actual nature of something and use it accordingly. One, then there's no... So we get this on two levels here. One, we get the principle of it that it's based on. The spiritual principle, the general principle. Then we have the source of that where it actually comes across the material world. Because economics is your basis of sense gratification, right? No money, no sense gratification, right? You don't pay money, you don't get the prostitute, you don't get the goat, you don't get the game or the gambler, you gotta have money. Right? You can't go up to the guy in the corner of the street and, hey, I'll take, you know, 1 kilo of crack that you got there, and he'll say, okay, you know, hand me this much money, alright, I'll take it for free. It's not going to happen. Right? So those four sinful activities are based on money. You got money, you can have it. You don't have money, you don't get bookas. Right? So when the money is real, these other things also then come into their pure state. But when the money's bad, then these four come up. Does that make sense? So we understand when the economics is pure, that also is mentioned by Manu. Someone is pure by how they make their money. Your money making is pure, you're pure. We're talking on the material platform, of course. But that's how it is. You know, Prabhupada, when people would give him money that were sinful, he wouldn't use it in his own accounts. Right? Because he'd have accounts where he'd put money that people would give to use for his ISKCON projects and his traveling and things like that. But he was in Africa once, I think, and somebody there, there's one family there. They're, you know, in one sense, a nice family, but they may be the richest Hindu family in Africa. They run the alcohol business, and their relatives run the one in India. You know, they're all connected, so they're very wealthy. So they gave a donation to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada put it into the donation box of the deities. Because it's just got too much sin to deal with. You don't want to have to deal with that. Why bother? So you just put it, you give it to the deities. Right? Does that make some sense? So you're running simultaneously the spiritual and the material at the same time. Does that make sense? So the Bhagavad is the primary, that's the spiritual. So we understand we don't exploit the material world for our point. Then the secondary is dealing with the material, then you have to understand the metaphysics of it and the physical. And the metaphysics is the bridge. Right? So when your economics is wrong, that means you're dealing with the nature of things wrong. So then your religion will be off. So your sense gratification will be off. Does that make sense? So then you can get down into dealing properly with the material world. So it works practically for the devotees. You know my economics is pure. You know my dealing with material energy means just on the day-to-day level is pure. And my consciousness in dealing with it is pure. So then you have the physical, the metaphysical, and the spiritual. Does that make sense? Then there's no prostitution. Then it's clean. It's good. Does this make some sense? So this then, you know, is, you know, one aspect we can glean from here. Any questions or comments on this? Yes.
Gold is sometimes used in Ayurvedic medicine. And aside from that, it's pretty to look at. I don't understand what the great value is of gold that I'll take the currencies of the world.
Why is gold so special, valuable? Because it's been established by Krishna as valuable. In the spiritual realm, then gold is the valuable metal that's used. More valuable than that is jewels. But the jewels are generally always set in gold. So he's established it. In other words, Krishna's created means he's Atmarama. So this is a general principle for all things in the material world. He's Atmarama, or spiritual world, let's say, culture. But to expand that rasa, that taste, that happiness, then that Rama, then he expands the devotees in the whole spiritual realm. Then in that, there's rasa of interchange. So in that, you need to have mediums for that. You have to have causes that will create exchange. You understand? Just like a boy and girl want to interact, you have to create mediums of exchange because it's not there. You know, you have to bump into them. You have to do something stupid. There always has to be something created to create interaction. Does that make sense? So Krishna, to interact with the living entities, creates the spiritual culture. So in that, you have the religious principles that establish what are the rasas. Right? Because you're a mother, then you deal with the child in this way. So that creates the forum for mother to show this affection. Or as wives, the conjugal, then for the gopis. You know, friendship, what they do, servitorship. Does that make some sense? And then within that, then there has to be how all those rasas interact with each other. So then you have to have your economics, you have to, the religion is there, your economics to power that, your sense gratification, which will be the actual direct interaction. So you have the emotional interaction coming from religion. Then based on economics, you can have the sensual interaction. Right? Does that make sense? The physical, because the emotion doesn't need any money. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? A family can sit there on the side of the road, you know, or, you know, sitting there in a, you know, ghetto, having nothing, but they can still emotionally interact, because it's based on the religious principles of who is in what station in the family. And based on that, that you can't take away. But sense gratification requires economics, because then you have to have something physical. So that requires, you know, gaining that. So there has to be a way that I have this, you have that, we can make changes. So, you know what I'm saying? You have sense facility for sense gratification that I want, and I have what you want, so we'll trade. Does that make sense? So Krishna's then established that gold is then the standard for that. So then value of everything is established on gold coins. So even, let's say, Radharani has a necklace that she'll give to Krishna, comes dressed as, I think this, one time as a demigoddess. And Radharani's so pleased with the beauty of this gopi and the mood and everything like that, she takes one of her valuable necklaces that's worth 100 million gold coins, right? And gives that as a gift. So it's, but it's calculated in gold coins. Or like, Mazumdar or Haranya and Raghunathas Goswamis. Huh? Govardhan Mazumdar and Haranya Mazumdar, yeah. So then it's calculated in gold coins. They make a profit from the tax collection that they get to personally keep after they've paid off the debt they owe to the Nawab of 2 million gold coins per year. Right? Tax-free. Rupa Goswami had 10,000 gold coins that he left as emergency, which his brother Sanatan then offered to the guard to get him out of the jail. Right? Because you have to offer pretty good, because your head's on the line if you let, you know, the, because that was the particular prison where the Nawab would keep, you know, very selected criminals. So it has to be high security. So to allow someone to escape, you know, you have to pay a lot. So you understand the theme is gold coin. The gold coinage is the standard of judging everything else's worth. Then from the gold, then you get down to its weights until you get down to, you've seen these gunja mala, gunja seeds? You know these black, they're either red and black or white and black. So that is a weight, has a value in gold. So that's where you can get down to smaller, you know, actual dealing. And then from there you get down into those little dinky conch shells. You see in Puri they make garlands out of. So before that was used as money. So 11 of those conch shells to a paisa. So originally it was all based on gold weight, you know, how many guncha and stuff like that. So that's all established in the Dharma Shastra. So what is the value of something? And then accordingly, then there'll be some fluctuation in the market on it, price of things based on availability. You grow it here, right in your field, it's cheaper. It's not grown here, it's grown in Krishnagar, it's more expensive because you have to transport it. There's a drought, then it's more expensive because you didn't get any crop this year, so you have last year's crop, so then it, you know, it'll double in price. You understand? So that way you'll get fluctuation, but it's still based on gold coinage. So Krishna's created it for the spiritual interaction. And like that, he's created the Dharma Shastra. He's created Nyaya, so there's a logic. You know, it's just like he's created grammar, so you can play with it. You know, it's like Radharani asks him, where did you stay the night? You know? He says, your vas. But that can also mean, you know, your eyes, you know, I mean your residence. It can mean your fragrance. It can mean your dress, depending on the context. So Krishna keeps taking it out of context. Oh, where is your vas? Oh, my vas. My residence is in your eyes. And no, I ask, where did you stay the night? Oh, yes, I've taken on this fragrance just to please you. Like this, you know, and so like this, he says, okay, then forget this word juggling, okay, then Then she says in a different way, you know, how did you spend the night? Rather than just say vas, which means where did you reside, she used the term, you know, the night, and then Krishna then by grammar and logic breaks it again, so that it means that, you know, he stole, this night was stolen. He says, you know, what do you mean he stole the night? You know, I saw that, you know, it was, you know, and then she goes, okay, forget this guy. You know what I'm saying? So he creates all this. He creates the culinary science so that they can cook and there can be the whole exchange based on that. He creates sadhana so he can get up in the morning. You know, his mother can come wake him up, you know, at a certain time. Then he goes to the goshala, right, and milks the cows. Then after that, then he comes, takes his bath, then he takes his meal. Then he goes out to, you know, then he takes up his occupation. You know, taking the cows out to the field, then it comes in the evening, then there's the family and the meal and then recreation, you know, music and these things, then he takes rest, and then, you know what I'm saying, then it's day and night, so then he can be in the day with the cowherd boys, Mother Jashoda, night he can be with the gopis. Does that make sense? So, the whole spiritual culture is created to affect rasa. Exchange. So the material world is simply the perverted reflection of that. So it's an exact reflection. But as the tree in the water is an exact reflection, but doesn't have the qualities. It looks the same. So everything here looks exactly the same as in the spiritual world, in its natural state. But the perversion is we're God instead of God being God. Right? Does that make sense? The Mother Jashoda is worshipping her son. She's attached to her son, but her son is God. Right? And she's doing it to please the son. Here, the son's not God, unless you ask a Hindu. And then the mother is as close as you get to true affection, but there's still that element of their own satisfaction. So, it's not quite there. So everything is like that. So your economics, your sense gratification, the religious principles, the concept of liberation, it's all the same as in the spiritual world. But here it's perverted because we put ourselves in the center rather than Krishna. So that's why the concept of economics is an eternal principle. Anywhere you go, gold is valuable. Everybody likes gold. Because it's empowered by Krishna with the concept of value. Does that make sense? So, that's the point. It's all dead matter, but Krishna empowers it with whatever potency is there in the spiritual world that has the rasa. But there it's direct, and here it's a fraction, a portion, a reflection. Does that make sense? So you'll find that in anything. The concept of medicine is there. The concept of culinary art, and that everybody—it's like every culture of the world has a ritual to eating. It doesn't matter who they are, from the, you know, simplest aborigines up to the so-called most sophisticated person. There's a ritual for eating, right? The concept of marriage is there in every last culture of the world. And there's a ritual for it. Right? Does that make sense? Death, right? Everything. It's all, because it's all created by Krishna. There's some kind of clothes, even the aborigines. Nobody goes completely naked. There's something there. They either decorate with some kind of thing, or they wear some kind of colors, or headdress, or there's something that makes them make status, and you understand? So that's because it's all reflected from the spiritual world. So the principle of it always goes back to Krishna. That's why everything that's here in the material world doesn't matter what the time, place, or circumstance. The principles come from Krishna. It can still be used in Krishna service. It's a misnomer presented by the modern demoniac social system that Kali Yuga is special and unique, and it doesn't function according to God's rules. Therefore, as devotees, we don't have to follow God's rules. It's a demoniac idea. It's not actually real. The point is it's based on the principle that Krishna's created anyway. Therefore, economics can always be used in Krishna's service. Right? Even though it's illusory, it can still be used in Krishna's service. We don't have the gold standard. We still have paper in the stock market. But because everybody agrees to the illusion, we could still take the profits of that, you know, false economic system and use it in Krishna's service. It's not because now it's false we can't use it. Right? Does that make sense? So still, food, dress, living styles, you know, speaking, etiquette, it can all still be used. But one has to know the principle to do that. Otherwise, then one will be misguided. Because one will, if one doesn't know the principle, one actually sincerely thinks it's separated from Krishna. So that's called Maya. And Yoga Maya means you see it's not separated, it's connected. Does that make sense? So when you connect it, there's no prostitution of it. If it's disconnected, then you're prostituting it. So it's naturally in its improper form. Does that make some sense? So even that principle of that gold thing, you can take and apply it, you know, in any element. The reason it's valued and important is Krishna gave it that value. Is that okay? Yes.
So before the economics of the actual money had to be backed up by gold.
Well, no, it had to be gold, not backed up by gold.
Yeah, but then they had a paper system where they couldn't print more money than what was
there. But still, even that's wrong, Prabhupada's pointing out, is that you have X amount of gold and you only print X amount of pieces of paper that's still prostituting the money, but it's still better than you have more paper than what you have gold. And now in some places they sell their gold.
But that's my question, that not have more paper than they have gold. So what is actually keeping their value?
Faith.
Just faith.
Only faith. It's blind faith, that's all. That was the worry in the whole scare in the millennium scare, was that people would lose faith in it. Just like you go, I don't know now, but you go back some years, maybe I was told this, let's say I think 96, we were in Nairobi, and some discussion came up about the Congo, because the Congo was at one point managed by the Belgian, you know, what do you call somebody from Belgium, the Belgians, okay. So they were managing it. And it was a very wealthy country because they have so much mines. Natural resources, extremely wealthy country. And it seems to be quite readily available. But then, you know, naturally self-governance is desired. And so the Belgians left. And along with it went all the management. And he said what used to take from the border of Kenya to the main capital city, I think, was 3 hours drive on the highway. They said now it takes, at that time, took 3 weeks. Because all the bridges, roads, everything's finished. So, you know, you came in with a, how do you call it, amphibious, you know, army vehicle, then you'd probably do very good. But, you know, otherwise, very difficult. And they said that even though they have paper money, the locals won't use it. You have to give jewels and gold. I mean, it's like you want to buy something, you have to plunk down a raw, you know, an uncut diamond, you know, or stuff like that. And then, you know, exchange goes on. So that's the thing, is that they're worried that people won't have faith in the money. You know, there's always that famous story of the later stages of World War II. Somebody went with a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks to the store and put it outside the store, just went in the store for a second to ask if they had the goods. They came back. The person had dumped out the money on the ground and stolen the wheelbarrow. Because a wheelbarrow was considered more valuable than those pieces of paper. So the point is it's purely faith. That's the amazing thing. Is that people say this stock is worth money. So they buy it at this price. And so the more people buy it, the higher it goes. Until the point that it's overbought means there's more buying of it than its actual kind of normal worth. You know what I'm saying? So then it starts to drop. Right? And then people start to lose faith in it, so they start to sell it like anything. Then they oversell it, and then that's the time that it starts to go up again. So people who know the market then know you buy in here, and then you sell there, or you sell at the top and buy at the bottom. You know, so they make money off of it, simply because people have faith in it. And what's fun is that you have the original stock market has been there for thousands of years. It was started, it means in the Western history, it started by the Romans. The Japanese had it also. Is that you just, what is the value today, but you actually had the grains and goods, so you're actually dealing with real goods. The stock market was based on real goods. But nowadays it's not. You have these pieces of paper called stocks, so you don't have any goods. You know what I'm saying? Your commodities is still goods. You buy the commodity, you can buy and sell it all you like, make your money, but if you don't sell it on time, you know, you're going to have this big monster truck drive up to your door and drop so many X amount of tons of soybeans on your front yard because you actually own it. You know, so the whole point is that it's actually just faith. That's the amazing thing. That's why it can fluctuate so much. You'll see in the market, it's like anytime a natural disaster happens, nobody wants to invest any money. The stock market plummets. I mean, so many points. You know, 9/11 happens, it plummets. You just had these explosions in London just a couple of months back. Stock market just is going like this, just drops. Because when that happens, no one wants to put in the money because they don't know what will happen to it. So that's the point. As soon as there's a natural calamity, everyone withholds the money and everything goes down. And as soon as they're confident, they put it back in. So the crash of 1930 in America was simply because everyone got freaked out. There were people making, Gann, I think, made $50 million on the stock market. $50 million in the 1930s. He was doing fine. Right? So there were people who were doing fine, but those who were based on the stock market lost because people lost that will to put it in. So that's the thing. You can learn from that. It's emotions. And things work on emotion. That's my point of there. It's prostitution. Unless the emotion's there, you don't get the result. So unless you're dealing with the emotions of people, you don't actually get the result. You know what I'm saying? In men, you can do it a little bit less. With women, no emotion, no result. It's direct. You know, with the men, if it's intellectual, you can get a result. Even if there's no real emotion. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? How does? Does sadhana bhakti work without emotion? There's the basic principle of emotion that you want to elevate yourself, you have faith in God, you have faith that we're God's servant, we have faith that we can improve our situation and come to our natural position through the process. But basically it's intellectual because we don't necessarily like to do the elements of sadhana bhakti. So intellectually we've accepted it, so we're doing it, but that's still based on faith, which is emotion. So still, to act, you have to get the mind behind it. But you approach it through the intellect. In other words, you hear the philosophy, go, okay, this is nice, I'm convinced, then the mind accepts that. But then the processes of it to get through, it hasn't necessarily accepted. So by the intellect, then those are each accepted and then practiced, and then slowly, slowly, once the mind accepts it, then you're home free. Because that's what Raghunuga Bhakti means. The mind's accepted the process of sadhana bhakti, that it likes it. That's called sadhana, that's called Raghunuga Bhakti. Where you're doing it because intellectually you know it's right and it gets you the result of advancement in devotional service, that's called Vaidhi Bhakti. Does that make sense? So that it's simple. So, but it's based on faith, which is emotion. So that seed of faith has to be there. And as that grows, you advance. So still, because devotional service is based on rasa. So it won't function outside of itself. You know what I'm saying? So that faith has to be there, and that grows, and that becomes, matures into prema. So prema is defined as mature faith. Like that. So still, it has to be there. But technically what you're dealing with is the intelligence. And that you're then convincing the mind by practice, that the mind sees, okay, if we get the result, it works, it's good, the experience is nice. I can relate to it. So then it's accepting. Does that make sense? Last point, and then we'll end the class here. You had a good... No, you.
Just back to the point, which is the knowledge. What the stories, they say that the creation of producing paper currency is a goal and real goods are not practical for modern trade.
Gold is not practical for the modern. I mean, okay. Okay, so I think gold is worth 660 rupees a gram. 660 rupees a gram. Okay, so that means 10 grams is 6,000 rupees. 100 grams would be 60,000, right? So, a bundle of notes weighs about how much? You have 500 rupee notes, you have 100 of them, how much does that weigh? At least 100 grams, right? So, gold is worth more than that 100 grams. So, how is it impractical? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's like this. This has been taught to you so that you accept it, like everything else in the modern culture, right? The point is like this, if I have gold, what I have is all I got. I can't play with it, right? But pieces of paper I can play with. A bank, like you have 100 people and they put $100, you know, dollars in the bank. Right? So technically you should have $10,000 in the bank. Right? But you go to that bank, whatever is the actual investment on paper, they by law only have to keep 2-3% in their vault. And the rest of it they invest and play with. Right? So this is the whole point. It's how to make money. So they create the stock market on goods. Then they get derivatives of that. You play this the stock market itself. Right? You have Dow Jones is the 30 top blue chip companies in America. Industry. Right? Their stock worth, you add that all up, that's the Dow Jones. It has no meaning. But it's something worth trading. Right? And then you get derivatives off of that. Right? It's stuff you don't have. I sell the goods today. Right? It means the market goes up, right? But I sell the goods here. I sell it. I've already sold it. And I will deliver it to you in 3 months. So I buy it down here. I don't even have it. I've already sold it. I don't even have the goods in my hand. It's in someone else's hand. It's on a computer. And then after 3 months, I sell it at a lower price, and I make my profit. I mean, I buy it. Excuse me. I buy it. I already sold it. Now I buy it. Because it's only for delivery. That's called futures. It doesn't exist. Right? And there's more subtle derivatives of that. You know, there's even celebrities are on the stock market and people buy and sell shares in the celebrities. You know, oh, you know, Michael Jackson's worth this much today and, oh, his song was bad, so everyone, you know, sells out and, you know, if he makes a good song, everyone buys. So all these have been created by very intelligent people to make money. Off of you, who buys that gold is impractical. You know? Think of it this way. Which would put the bigger smile on your wife's face? A closet full of paper notes or a closet full of gold ornaments? Think about it. It means the guy who's sold that concept to you has a closet full of gold ornaments. And the way he does it is getting you to have a closet full of paper. Does that make sense? So like that, they've done it to everything. They do it to the economics, they do it to the education, they do it to the whole social system, justice, everything. It's all been done to make profit, right? Because this has come up now, it's a whole side issue, because now is the bourgeois run the thing. Previously the Kshatriyas would run, and previous to that the Brahmins would run. But about, I'm not sure how long it was, but something like, during the Egyptians' time, the bourgeois started to break away from the control of the Kshatriyas. And that's created all these modern things, because everything is gained by volume, by numbers. Right? Brahmins and Kshatriyas think in quality. Is it religious? Is it according to Shastra? Is it beneficial? That's how they think. Vaishyas, Shudras think in quantity. Vaishyas will think in the economic volume, and the Shudras will think in the physical volume. Right? Does that make sense? So many people say this is good. That's the way the Shudras think. Vaishyas are what makes money, what makes the profit. How much do you get out of it? So that's what you hear today. How much do you hear is, well, according to religious principles, this is not so good. Or it's not according to Shastra. Right? Even in the devotee community. Which one's prominent? Right? General devotees, it's the Shudra concept. Managers, it's the economics. You've been taught this. Right? You've been trained like this. Huh? Yeah, yeah, no, but I'm saying this is the teaching that goes on. This is the way you're trained when you go to modern social interaction. You're trained like this. Like that. It's just the way it is. But it's been so long since these things have been established. You know, I mean, the concept of the paper money and that goes back, I think, 400 years. Like that. It took a long time to establish, but now it's normal. No one even thinks twice about it. But for a few hundred years, it was big fights between the bourgeois and the governments over this. Big fights. But, you know, whatever. So, but our point is we couldn't care less about all this. We know what is the natural standard, and that should be there. But even if it's not, it doesn't matter. We can use whatever is there in Krishna's service. So we don't get worried about it. It's not something we stay up all night thinking about. It's just we should know that our conditioned nature is nothing special. And it's not our conditioned nature. It's what's been dictated to us by others. We're not even so individual, you know, as we think. Is something? Yes, ma'am. What impact is the contaminated money? Is the money carries, because of its nature, how it was created, generated, it will carry that sin. So if you take the money from someone who runs an alcohol business, you will get a portion of the reaction of that, just like food. Depending on the consciousness of it, you will get some part of it. So it's just the way it goes. So charity always carries sin of the person who gives it. No, that's there. Yeah, an honest exchange is another thing. If you buy something, you remove the gross elements of it. Just like, let us say I go to the market. Someone gives me some cooked food, like some bread. They've given it to me, so I get both the consciousness and their sin. If I buy it, I cut out the sin, I only get the consciousness. But I still get the consciousness. Like that. So it's lessened if it's an honest, but charity carries more, honest transactions less. But the point is if you are making money according to your nature, then the money's pure. But if you're making money not according to your nature, that's impure. Like that. So purity of money is a very important thing in the Varnashram. You know, especially Brahmins. That's why it's recommended they stick to the ones that are more pure. You know, it's just like begging, teaching, gleaning. These are considered the best for the Brahmin. Farming, not so good for the Brahmin, because for the Brahmin, too many living entities are killed. All the worms, bugs, and that. Vaishyas, it's not a problem. That is their religion, to farm, so they don't get that. But it affects the Brahmins, because they're supposed to be non-violent. So therefore, for a Brahmin, despite the popular, popular feelings, Brahmins should not get into farming. That's for the Vaishyas. Vaishya Shudras, they do the farming. The Brahmins should teach, study, teach, do the deity worship, you know, these kind of things. Even if they do better, a Brahmin does business than farming. But if he does business, it should be things that are direct. You know, in other words, people need plain colored, plain cloth. Like white cloth, you use it for so many things. It's a real commodity that has a natural value. But colored cloth is very illusory. You know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, Brahmin wouldn't generally sell saris because there's more illusion, there's more maya to it. A Vaishya would do it, but a Brahmin wouldn't. He'd sell plain cloth or things that people actually just require. Does that make sense? Then it maintains that kind of simple purity. But Vaishya, because trade is their thing, then for them to do it, it doesn't contaminate them because it's their nature. Just like a Brahmin, if he tills the field and uses bulls personally, he can't castrate the bulls or put rings in their noses. But a Vaishya can. You know what I'm saying? So there's all these kind of restrictions because it goes against their brahminical nature. So even though it's not standard that they do it, they can't do the things, then they find something else of another varna that doesn't go against the brahminical things, but gets them their income. Because the Brahmin is only supposed to maintain himself. He's not supposed to become stinking rich. The Vaishya is, because the Vaishya is supposed to give 50% charity. So he's supposed to be rich. Therefore, the Vaishya can use all these different things to make the money because he's going to give them charity anyway. But the Brahmin will give them charity, but his point is he's supposed to be benefiting others by the preaching, teaching, deity worship. So he only uses these things to just make enough to make ends meet. Does that make sense? Is investing bona fide? Is it gambling? This is a very interesting point. You want to know? Yeah, okay. The thing is if you know what you're doing, it's a science. So everything's a gamble. You know, means, okay, this boy marries this girl, it's a gamble. You buy some property, it's a gamble. You buy some stock and you're going to sell that, it's a gamble. But if you know the science, it's an educated guess. So it's not considered gambling. You understand what I'm saying? So if you're dealing in investments and stocks, if you're a technical analyst, you know how the market works and what the systems are. And it's not gambling. You understand? Probably one of the most unknown facts is Prabhupada was planning to go into the stock market. But somehow or another, the opportunity came up and Mr. Bosch forced him into his business. But he was going to be a trader in the stock market. But it's there in the conversation. So, if you're a technical analyst, So you know how the market functions by astrology and by psychology, and that you just know how it functions. So then it's just like any other business. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't, but you basically win because you. But those people that just read books and, you know, the magazine that says, oh, this is a great stock, invest in this, and you just put your money in, they're gambling. Does that make some sense? Like that. So it's also that it means all the economic, that you're dealing with paper money is gambling, that, you know, that it still has the value, right? Today I have the money, I go and exchange, and it's already dropped 2 rupees in value. You know what I'm saying? So it's all the value of gamble that I say, you know, so, but it's educating. So that's the point. So it's a fine line, you know. That's the point. Okay? I think it's probably good we'll end and then continue questions, because those who want to go, then, okay. So end here and then we can go for another half an hour. Rajaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayadita Gauru ki. Yeah, if you just give it to Krishna, then you don't care. It's if you use it for yourself personally.
With the
first word, you know, yeah, here, just, we'll ask the question, because those who are staying will want to ask questions. Okay. Okay, so any other questions? Is there any questions? The word Hare Krishna, what's the important element that's working? The spiritual. The spiritual platform is that's Krishna's name. So then by associating with Krishna's name, then we advance. Emotional is there that may develop, that we have that attraction or attachment to Krishna. But the point is it's not necessarily there in the beginning. Right? Why are you chanting? Because you love to chant the Lord's name? Or are you chanting because that's the rule, you chant 16 rounds? So that's the point. So it's from the intellectual platform you're chanting Hare Krishna. You like it to some degree, therefore you're chanting. So some emotion is there. But to that degree that the mind is purified, to that degree then you're dealing with spiritual emotion. Otherwise it'll be there, you know, generally on spiritual things you don't have material emotion, generally. You know what I'm saying? You have spiritual emotion or intellectual understanding, determination. So sometimes it's there. You may like that. Let's say before you became a devotee, you used to sit around and chant mantras, you know, like that. So then you like doing that aspect. So there'll be the aspect of by the chanting, that kind of peace that comes and this and that, but it's not the name itself. Does that make sense? So there may be some attachment to that particular process because of conditioning. But, and that will inspire you to do it, but because it's spiritual, you will get the benefit. So it doesn't matter. That's the process is so perfect. Is that even if you have a material motive, if it's connected to Krishna, you will be, and you will be purified, you will advance. Does that make sense? Where does emotion come from? What is it? What is emotion? Okay. Emotion is seated in the mind. It's a platform of rasa. There's three platforms of rasa. The senses, the emotion, and transcendence. So, the senses, yeah, the senses, the emotion, natural emotional platform, and transcendental platform. These are the three platforms of rasa. Right? Does that make sense? So, technically they're called spiritual is Vaikuntha rasa. The emotional is called Swargiya rasa. And the sensual is called Partiva rasa. In consciousness, this is the Anamoy, Manamoy, and Anandamoy. Right? Anamoy is the senses. Manamoy or Jnanamoy is the emotions, and Anandamoy is the transcendental. Right? So that makes Pranamoy or economics the link between the emotions and the senses, right? Does that make sense? And liberation is the link between the emotions and the transcendence. Does that make sense? So the emotion is the result of an activity based on a relationship. Does that make sense? In other words, some endeavor, you have the experience that you gain from the performance of an activity of interaction between two entities, two or more entities, that's your emotion. Does that make sense? In other words, the prayojana is the experience, right? The abhideya is the interaction. And the sambandha is what's interacting, you and another person, or you and some element, item, you know, like your car, or your curtain, or your shoes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, if you gain what you wanted, then you call that happiness. If you don't gain what you wanted, you call that distress. Does that make sense? Yeah? So now the emotions on the Swargiya platform mean, oh, let's take it on the spiritual platform, is that it's based on your natural love for Krishna. Right? So you have a Stai Bhava. Right? You have a particular relationship with Krishna, so that is the rasa of Krishna. Therefore, the endeavor is the relationship is you and Krishna, that's your relationship in this rasa. You take Mother Yashoda and Krishna. So there's Mother Yashoda as a mother, him as a son. That's the sambandha, right? She therefore then cooks for him and feeds him. That's the abhideya. And the prayojana is that rasa of, you know, exchange of vatsalya. Does that make sense? Material platform, then it will be the same. Depending upon the rasa and what you're exchanging with, then you will get that emotional thing if it's based on religious principles. Right? If it's between you and a sense object, then it's sensual. Right? But if it's you and someone of the same species, then it can be emotional if it's according to religious principles. Right? If it's not according to religious principles, then you'll get the secondary rasas. And you'll get other emotions like anger, greed, jealousy, all these lower things. They're actually, if you analyze them, they're not actually on the emotional platform. They're on the economic platform. Right? You're jealous because someone else has something you want. envious, they have it, you don't want them to have it, you should have it. Anger, I didn't get it. Right? So all these negative emotions technically are all from economics. Though sometimes we get something, we're happy. So a lot of the emotions that we feel aren't actually pure emotions. They're based on economics. They're based on pranamoya. Real emotions based on manamoya. Right? That's why, you know, for the last so many years we've been talking so strongly on the point that devotees are going neurotic from not experiencing proper emotion. And they fight and kill each other and politic, all based on secondary emotions. They don't know where to look. Right? People are getting married to taste the emotions of conjugal exchange, the emotions of it. They don't know what it is, so they're frustrated. And therefore then they start taking up all modern and new agey and every description of ways of going about it, anything other than Krishna consciousness. Claiming that Krishna consciousness doesn't work in this, but the point is they're uneducated and they don't know what they're doing. So, only because devotees have taken it as such a strong value, we've spoken on it so that know what it is and you'll get it, plus because it is properly according to Shastra, it's very easy to engage in Krishna's service. So by experiencing it, you'll be materially satisfied and you'll relax and you'll stop harassing and criticizing devotees. Second is because you've engaged in Krishna's service, you'll be purified and liberated from the material world and freed from that material contamination. Neither of them are devotion, but it will get you out of the material, it will fulfill your material need and get you out of the material world. It will bring you to Brahma-Bhuta. Then your devotional activities must be strong, you must know and be cultivating the devotional service so that you develop that love for Krishna. And that's got to be the prominent. And if that's the prominent, then it will come out as the devotional service will be pure. And if it's not the prominent, the actual material, then it will be mixed. Does that make sense? So that's, in a nutshell, what we've been preaching, the angle we've been preaching on for the last, I'd say, especially two, but more, 3, 4, 5 years. Like that. And generally it's misconstrued and misjudged and like that. I can only say a handful of people have actually understood it and used it to advantage. Most missed the point and a few have used it against me. So, like that. Like that. Faith, yeah. So it's a rasa, it's reciprocation. So everything boils down to relationship. There's nothing that's not relationship. That's why devotees have difficulty applying the social systems, the economic systems, the relationships, I mean the family's situation, because they look at it actually from economics. That's how they've been trained. They're not looking at it from duty and what are the emotional exchange. Because if the duty was there, there would be no question that anybody would have any problems other than what's inherent. You know what I'm saying? Means there's an inherent nature of man and woman, or of children, or that. There's always going to be some problem. Even the best child, best parent, the kid does wake up in the middle of the night and is hungry. You know, it's not because you're Krishna conscious and the kid's born according to Garbhadan that he's not going to wake you up in the middle of the night. No, that's the nature of kids. You know, they are going to, you know, pass stool all over and vomit and, you know, all these things. It's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? So, other than that, everything can work very nicely. So, devotees come under the illusion that if I follow devotional service, take religion, there'll be no material distress. That's basically called the heavenly planets. Right? That's what I've heard. Prabhupada's made the comment that much of his devotees are headed for the heavenly planets because that's really what they want. They want Krishna eventually, but they want nice material facilities and everything goes wrong, it's Krishna's fault, rather than, no, material world's bad. And so there is going to be trouble. Does that make some sense? So everything is exchange. If this is understood, then good qualities become so important. Developing good qualities becomes more important. Because if you don't have good qualities, how will there be high quality exchange? Unless I'm humble, unless I'm tolerant, unless I'm respectful, unless I'm not working for a fruit of motive, how will any of my relationships work to a good degree? Right? And Lord Chaitanya states that as one of the eight main principles of his instructions. Right? So if I don't have these good qualities, and then from those four expand so many, if I don't have good qualities, how it will work? So therefore I should be cultivating the good qualities. But the focus is on Varanashram, simply on the economics of it, rather than the emotional thing of it. And then it comes down to the economics of it. It's not like that. The man thinks, what am I getting at? What am I getting at? Kids, what am I getting at? You know, the temple manager, what am I getting at? It's the temple devotees, what am I getting at? And that's the way the thing, because economics is pushed. You need economics, but economics is based on religion. Right? Economics doesn't happen separately than religion. Right? So, religious principle, I mean, how are you getting the devotees out there to collect? They're doing it for Krishna, they're doing it for the temple, they're doing, this is our duty, we have to preach, this is God. That's what the person's saying, but the result is simply the money, rather than this is your duty, get out there as a temple leader, I make you do your duty. As a result of that, we're getting money. And what money comes, we will use for furthering that preaching and getting more people to engage with. You understand? That's the viewpoint. But once you shift it to it, and then everybody looks at it by religious principles and duty and devotion. But if you shift it to the economics, then at some point everyone goes, hey, what am I getting out of this? And therefore you see Sankirtan devotees last a maximum of only 3 years. And then they're gone. Why? Because they're going out making their own money. Why should I make tons of money for the temple and be dealt with so badly and like that, where there is no proper emotional support? Right? So we want to get married and go out, and one thinks one will get the support there because one doesn't know, one still thinks it's economics, one doesn't get it there either. You know what I'm saying? So that's the science. So it's a matter of you put it here. The same thing gets done. You know, you'll generally see, except for those who are really A-class Vaishyas and know the science of making money, generally your best, biggest collectors are the ones that are doing it on the spiritual platform. And the results they get are way greater and they last longer. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because the people are more inspired. And if you had a handful of devotees like that, and then it is very special. So the point is that what could be preached. So therefore, even the one with the Vaishya mentality, or the Shudra mentality, or Kshatriya mentality, whatever it is, they can be doing it to please Krishna. Right? I have salesmanship ability. Right? I'm a salesman. So my art is sales. So therefore, I will use that in Krishna's service to deliver these books to them so that they may benefit. They also give me money. I have an ability to know how to get people to give money. So I'll use it to that, to get them to take the books. And then that money will be used for Krishna. Right? There, or, you know, this is a religious principle, so it must be done. Or it's a challenge to get out there and get each person and each individual to approach from the uniqueness that is there, so the diplomacy becomes the element. And so therefore, I win the challenge. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore the book is distributed. Or this is the preaching movement, this is knowledge, so therefore I'm distributing this knowledge to, you know, about Krishna. And in exchange for this they're very happy and they give a dakshin. Does that make sense? So everybody can be engaged. It doesn't matter what the varna is. Book distribution, preaching then becomes very valuable for them. But it's the angle in which you view it, like that. If you put it to the economics simply, then something is lost. You go to those temples where it's so strong, they have good economics, good facilities, fabulous facilities, lots of money, but you talk to any devotee in the temple except for one or two, generally they're frustrated because there's no emotional support. You know, and we're not talking emotion, that emotion's valuable. We're talking is that they're people, so there should be relationships. Because emotion's not the goal either. Love of God is the goal. But the point is that nice emotional interaction between devotees that support is not seen. But it's, you go into it, it's a fabulous looking temple. You know? And you go to some temples, fabulous atmosphere, great family, things like this, interaction is great, but they can never pay their bills. So you should try to strike in between, you know, like that. So it's a matter of you try to find the balance. So that Krishna consciousness is there, then it works for everybody. So relationship is the key. It's the essence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary to Shikshastaka mentions Sambandha is the field. Everything else is derivatives from that. When you have a relationship, then there can be an activity that gives a result. If there's no relationship, where is the activity result? So Sambandha is the big circle, and Abhideya Prayojan are the smaller circles within that. But the focus is on the Prayojan. Does that make sense? Because that's where the experience is. Right, just like you have a family, right? And there's children. Where is the focus of the family? Right? Hope this is not a trick question. Don't know, okay. So according to ancient tradition, as soon as there's a child in the family, all the focus in the family goes on to the child. Right? But the bigger scene happening is the parents. Right? They're making the money, they're paying the bills, they're cooking, they're cleaning, they're arranging everything, creating the whole field. That's all the Sambandha. Right? But where's the focus? It's on the exchange between them and the youngest. Even as older children, it's always the youngest. The youngest is the most dear to everybody. Right? All the joking, all the laughing, everything's with them. But they're the smallest element in the whole thing. But it gives the strongest experience. So the experience of that, so the same way Sambandha is the bigger picture. But the process and the prayojana is where the focus goes. Does that make sense? So if it's not based on relationship, it's guaranteed it won't work. And if it is working, it's because they're following something that someone else has understood the relationship and made it work. You know what I'm saying? Even though the person themselves doesn't know the science, but if they just mimic what the other person who knew the science did, they'll in many situations get a good result. But in situations that are outside the realm of the detail that's been taught by that system, it won't work. Does that make sense? The person who created the system understood the science so they can apply it time, place, circumstance. How many things can you put in one book? Right? So how much is put in the book, that much detail somebody memorizes, applies in those situations, it gets a result. Right? But outside those situations, they'll fail because they don't know how to apply it time, place, and circumstance. Does that make sense? So someone will argue, no, I'm following this or that, or I read this, you know, self-help book and it's really helping. That's because the person who wrote the self-help book understand something. So if you copy what they do, it may work. But it works on certain people. Like I remember one person doing a self-help thing, and you know, and you're supposed to encourage the other people under you. So the person, for example, clicked into it and started to do it with me. We know you can do it, and we know that, you know, you're really capable, but, you know, somehow or another the circumstance now is, you know, that, and you're not feeling confident in that. But, you know, we know, we have faith that you can do it, and all this and that. That works great for Shudras. but he's applying it on me. I'm sitting there going, this is the phoniest thing I've ever heard a devotee ever say to another devotee. And the devotee, he was, because he's, you know, more of a Vaishnava mentality, so he thought it was perfectly honest and natural. That is the way you work there, but because the self-help book is aimed at economics, it's used in the business, that's how you deal in business. But you take it out of the business, the guy didn't write a book how you deal at home or with friends. So therefore, when they apply those tactics on that, it's so phony. But they don't know it because they don't have that sensitivity or training. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that the person who wrote the book probably applies it in his family fine. Because he'll talk to his wife not like a laborer. Or he'll talk to his son. It's the same principle that you have faith in the person and they made a mistake, so you know that they'll get it together. You know? Like that. So that remains. But the example that he gave to illustrate it is all that the person who didn't understand the principle gleans. So that's all they can use. So it sounds very good, and it works in most situations because economics is the value. So even if it's bogus, it will get you an economic result. I've seen situations where someone is so in illusion to the situation, you just go along with it. Right? Does that make sense? Means we were supposed to have a wedding. We set up for the wedding. It was basically outside. Well, we're setting up, then everybody's dressing and, you know, making themselves presentable. During that time, after we set up and before they were ready, a monster storm came and blew everything away. I mean, gone. Like that. You know, we saved the ghee and the wood and a few things, but I'll decorate everything else. Gone. And the place where we're having the wedding, 2 inches of water is sitting there. And as soon as then the rain, you know, goes down, then we went to where the person was, you know, the boy getting married. And, you know, about to explain that, hey, we just had the storm, this and that, I don't know what we're going to do. And this is like 30 seconds after it's just stopped so that, you know, you could walk. And they're sitting kind of in the doorway of the place where they're sitting, you know, being, you know, somebody's fussing with their hair, with their garment, with their shirt, with each other, and all like that. And they're, you know, king of the world, the emperor of the world, or, you know, lord of the universe, or whatever it is, their size of ego. And as soon as I walked up, they said, is everything ready? We can start now? You know, and it's just the illusion was so complete and absolute that I just kind of like turned around and went back and, you know, put out the few things that were still left and squeegeed out the water and hurry up, we had no wedding, you know. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes it works because it's so stupid and the person is so illusional. Like that person was doing that whole, You know, Mr. Smith, you know, we know you're good. It was so bogus that if they came up to me and wanted something to be done, I'd probably do it. I would just think, this guy is so stupid. And he really thinks it's that, but because of his illusion, I wouldn't want to break it. You know, because Gita says, don't, you know, disturb the minds of the ignorant. He'd probably do it because the approach was pleasant and nice and everything. They followed the etiquettes, but it was like so misplaced and stupid. But, you know, so I'll do the work, but that kind of person I would never get anywhere close to. They would remain an acquaintance. They would never become more intimate than that. You know what I'm saying? So, in that way, it works. But you also have the social. That's why Dharma Shastra is there, because you are dealing with different people, therefore you have to adjust that. So technically speaking, economically, it works. But religiously, it was sinful. You know what I'm saying? Because it's against the nature. Like that. I was very annoyed. But he was giving an example, but just he was using it on me as an example. I felt highly annoyed. You know, Because as you can see through every syllable he's saying, it's not even like some of it makes sense and now you're like, hey, wait a minute, was there some twist here? Is there some motive? It was every word. Because, you know, but for the person working for you, they want to be recognized, they want to know they're supported. You are their support. So you want to feel that this person cares for you, knows you, and is your, what do you call it, your shelter. So therefore, every word there has meaning for them. You know what I'm saying? But when you come from a different platform, your relationship with them is not on this platform, then it doesn't have that meaning. Does that make sense? So it has to be adjusted according to the person. So if it's not, it fails. You know? So that's the point, is that the tattva is to point out the relationship. But if you don't know the science, you won't know the abhideya to get the rasa. You know, it's just like, okay, the man, you know, always give this example. Well, is that you have the parent and you have the child. Look at the child. Completely dependent, no brain, doesn't know discrimination, doesn't know what's right to do or that, completely self-centered, completely sensual, doesn't have any concept of higher values and things like this. Simply likes to waste time, doesn't like to work, lazy, irregular. Okay? So because of this, therefore the parent who, let's just taking it, that supposedly they're more mature and trained, they know what's right and wrong. So the parent technically is the absolute authority over the child. Whatever the parent says the child's supposed to do, basically there's not meant, basically no culture of the world will disagree with that. So by tattva, the parent is the absolute dictatorial, you know, authority of the child. And the child is, you know, stupid. Right? That's tattva. Rasa, how does it work? It's basically the exact opposite. The child, because of that, because of such dependency, then gets so much attention and affection and care and kindness and tolerance coming from the parent. So again and again they'll explain, again and again they'll make facility and arrangement. You know, so the humility, so therefore the kid is actually the lower position, but then if you want to operate the rasa, who takes the humble position? The parent. Who does everything revolve around? The child. Whose desires are you fulfilling? The child's. That's rasa. So that means then you, because you understand what's the relationship, so you don't go crazy that why do these kids always, why they're irregular, why they're so self. If you don't understand the sambandha, you go nuts. If you actually think kids are normal, you'll go crazy. If you understand they're crazy, you'll remain sane and you'll get them to become sane. But if you think they're normal, you'll go nuts. Right? So that's the science. So knowing that, then you can operate the interaction and then you will get the rasa. Because it's a process, it doesn't happen automatically. Just because relationship is there doesn't mean there's any taste of it. Relationship is just the platform. Only when you operate it, then you get the taste. Does this make sense? How many families understand this with their kids? How many families understand this and work on this principle? Very few. But there is something there. But you take this to more extreme where it's most badly applied and gets probably the least amount of result, is take the same thing and apply it to the position of man and woman. Right? Man's supposed to be the smart one, the woman's the stupid one. Okay, so now applying the same principle, what does that mean? That means the man is more humble and he's fulfilling the needs and desires of the woman. Then it works. How many families do you know of that do this? Yeah. Basically none. You know what I'm saying? So that's because they take it, the man is the authority, the woman just does that. So they're working on the ras, and they're working on sambandha, but they don't apply abhideya, and therefore there's no prayojana. And then they wonder why there's no interaction, why there's no... So this is the whole point. Unless you understand it's a relationship that you're going to operate, right? Because there's two parts of relationship. One is the facts. Second is the attraction to interact. Right? The kids like that. The mothers like this. But because of our attraction to interact, that's still sambandha. Right? That's the first one is sankarshan. What is the position? What are the duties? You know, the mother does this, the child, you know, supports, the mother does it, you know, these things. That's the shankarshan aspect of the sambandha. Then the prajumna aspect of the sambandha is the attraction of the mother to interact in that way. Right? So therefore, then because the science is understood, therefore she feeds the kid or raises him or does this and that in this way and gives the proper attention. So then the result, the prayojana, you know, in the Abhideya means Vasudeva, the prayojana is Aniruddha, is then that parental rasa is tasted by both the child and the parent. Does that make sense? And then they're satisfied. You know? Then they don't kill each other. Does that make some sense? So that's but if you don't understand the elements, if you don't understand that it starts with sambandha, starts with the shankarshan aspect, then you won't understand the rest of it. And the only reason you're looking for that shankarshan aspect is because of the aniruddha, you want the prayojana. The parent has the child because they want to taste parental rasa. But problem is they don't know what a kid is, don't know what a parent is, so they don't know how to interact, so therefore they don't get it. Now and again, by accident it happens because Maya is very clever. Because if she didn't give it at all, parental families would have ended a long time ago. But now and again, just as you're about to drown and throw in the towel, she pushes on this end and pulls the chair out of the water and you get one breath of air and then she dunks you back in again. You know, so it's just enough that you maintain faith that maybe, you know, like that. So she's good. She's good. Gotta give her credit. She's good. Does that make some sense? So not understanding a relationship causes all the problems. And not understanding how to operate the relationship then causes more problems. You know, like that. So it's a big problem. Big, big problem. But as long as one chants Hare Krishna and this and that, it doesn't really matter, because even if one's material life is pretty hellish, you will, you know, keep more. As long as you maintain faith in the spiritual. But some even lose faith in the spiritual if their material situation is too bad. Because they think Krishna should have taken care of this. You know what I'm saying? So in this lack of faith in authority, then it also tends to... it can erode one's faith in Krishna also. Therefore, the Vedic system is take care of the material also, but in such a way that it's favorable for your devotional service. Right? Does that make some sense? Yeah. Yes, last question, then we'll end.
Is the nature of conditioned nature the only way to purify it?
Is there another way to purify the conditioned nature other than engaging it? The direct spiritual activities are the most powerful, but in it you are engaging your conditioned nature. Right? You're going to chant with your hands and mouth and tongue and hear with your ears and digest it through your brain and hear it in your heart. You know, it's going to, you know what I'm saying? So you are going to engage the things, but it's kind of secondary. In other words, the Bhagavat takes the prominence. Another way is the Pancharatra, which is Bhagavat in the form of rules and regulations that deal with the conditioned nature. right? But it's everything about it is directed towards the Lord. There's nothing separate. So that's another way. So it does engage the conditioned nature. The third is the needs outside of the Bhagavat and Pancharatrik, that's covered by the Vedic. So that's indirect. Because you're doing it for your own needs, not for the Lord. In other words, the other two is you're engaging in the Lord's service and what facilities you have, you're engaging. And of course, naturally you may have something you like more or less. You prefer like dressing the deity, or prefer cooking, or singing for the deity, or managing for the deities, or you know, you'll have something that you like. But still, so your conditioned nature is more considered. But still, the focus is simply on the Lord. But in the Vedic, then, the focus, those elements of the Vedic that are directly connected to the Lord are already taken out and put in Pancharatra. They're already there. You have Achman. So all the rules for Achman that are in the Pancharatra are from the Vedic. So whatever Vedic is directly focused on the Lord, that's in the Pancharatra. Right? Those things that are not directly, that is more dealing with one's own emotional, sensual, economic, or these kind of needs, those are in the Varnashram. You understand?
What did it say? Who is qualified for
which path? How do we say? What?
Who is qualified for which path?
Who is qualified for what? Means everyone, as soul, is naturally automatically qualified as for the Bhagavad. But now, depending upon one's faith in the spiritual and one's faith in the material, then you'll add in that much Pancharatra or that much of the Vedic. If you have a lot of faith in the material, then you have to add in more Vedic. If you have less faith, you can just get by with the Bhagavat and Pancharatra. So it's they're seamless in moving between them. Because everything in the Vedic, it's a reflection of the spiritual. So it has its original source in the spiritual. Right? And the Pancharatra then is there as a bridge. And then the metaphysics of the Vedic then bridge it to the spiritual. You know what I'm saying? So you can go through it through the external, and go through it through the metaphysical, and then the spiritual connection is always there. Just, does that make sense? The devotee is fully surrendered to Krishna, whatever he wants. Aslishyava padaritam vinashtamam. Right? That Dharma Shastra also says the wife should, you know, take care of the husband no matter how bad he is. It's the same principle. Yeah, full faith, meaning you're on the platform of Brahmabhuta, means you're liberated. When you're in the stage of Bhava Bhakti, then you're fully qualified to only practice a Bhagavad. You don't have to follow any rule. Right? But if you're below that, then you add in how much of the other two are necessary. Right? Just like you're going to take your bath, you're going to eat, you're going to sleep, right? But you're going to dress yourself. But someone who's purely on the Bhagavad platform doesn't have to do that. Sukadeva Goswami didn't bother with dressing, right? You know, so they don't bother with bathing or this or that. They may take their bath, they may not take it if they remember. They'll take, there's no problem, they don't have a problem taking a bath. Just they're so busy they don't necessarily remember if they're avadhuts. That's why it said if the preachers, they come down to the mud on the platform. So the Uttamadhikaris, with that faith, but they're preaching on the mud on the platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So everyone's qualified for the Bhagavad, but that's the prominence. But depending upon the conditioned nature, you add in that much of the Pancharatrika Vedic to be fully engaged. Right? 24/7 body, mind, and word should be engaged in the Lord's service. You can do that with Bhagavat, that's the first option. If you can't, then you take Pancharatra, that's the second option, right? That's what it says in Gita. First, surrender, that's the best. Second, follow the rules and regulations of Sadhana Bhakti. Right? You can't do that, work for me. Now you add in Varnashram, but Naishkarmi. You can't do that, work for yourself and give me the result. So that's Sakam. So even if you're going to work within Varnashram, work within the Madhura platform. You know, or a pure Kanista platform. If you can't do that, work in an attached Kanista platform, but give the result to me. Right? And if you can't do that, then just be a nice guy. You know? Don't bother anybody. Okay? So, Auntie. Srila Prabhupada ki, Savareta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaina Taigo Buddha Parinanandi.